evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we put the spotlight on an organization that has been working on the African continent with a unique model of volunteerism, Corps Africa. That's the name of the NGO. And we are going to find out more about Corps Africa with the founder. She is Liz Fanning, and she is joining us via phone from New York City. She is the founder and CEO of Corps Africa. Liz, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And let me mention that Liz is a former Peace Corps volunteer. So let's get right into it and talk to me first about your experience as a Peace Corps volunteer, because that's where it all started for you when we talk about Corps Africa. So take us back to what it was like being a Peace Corps volunteer first. Why did you want to volunteer?
Okay, sure. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Morocco, 1993 to 95, so almost 25 years ago. I was in the High Atlas Mountains in south of Marrakesh and living in a very small village in the High Atlas Mountains doing environmental education projects. And I guess it inspired Corps Africa. I mean, the story that I tell is that I met a really amazing young woman in Marrakesh. Told her about what I was doing, and she was just so excited about it and, you know, wanted to hear what it was like in the mountains, what are the people like, and at the end of it, she said, how can I be a Peace Corps volunteer? You know, I'm Moroccan. I want to help my country. And I had to say, you know, sorry, it's only for Americans. So she changed my life, but I didn't know it at the time. it wasn't until 20 years later that I came back. I went to graduate school. My background is in fundraising, and I found myself back in international development and really came to believe that so many of the challenges in the industry of international development are because, you know, this work should be done by people from those countries. And even people from those countries need to take the time to live in the villages in the high poverty remote areas to really understand how people live. And, you know, to what we teach our volunteers is that if you want to help somebody, listen to them. That's what they need more than anything. Mm-hmm. So, and connections to the resources that are out there.
And they also become like a community coordinator where people can relate to them, really, because I think often you have certain barriers such as language, culture, and to have.
That's what we used to say to each other. Like, what are we doing here? There are so many college educated Moroccans who want to do what we're doing. And, you know, they're looking for jobs and they're looking for a way to be part of the solution for their country. And, you know, we come from the outside. We don't speak the language. We don't have the culture. And, you know, there's a lot of value to the Peace Corps. We don't want to replace Peace Corps. We want to complement it. You know, the relationship between the United States and the rest of the world and the understanding that Americans get of other countries and other countries get of Americans is fabulous. It's incredible, but it's different from what we're doing. There's enough room for Corps Africa, for young people to join Peace Corps volunteers and alongside them doing what they're doing.
So let me ask you this basic question. Why should somebody volunteer? Think about, you know, people have their jobs, family, or whatever it is that keeps us going every day. Why should somebody volunteer?
So many reasons. The idea of service. Actually, I think that the Peace Corps, the fact that young Africans want to be Peace Corps volunteers is the best thing that we do. They want to be Peace Corps volunteers because they see idealistic young Americans coming and helping. And, you know, that spirit of service, that spirit of wanting to help other people, wanting to give back. People have been fortunate and have something to give. And I think what you find as a volunteer is that you get a lot more than you give, too. There is the personal development, the transformative experience of getting out of your comfort zone, getting to know another part of the world, you know, learning another language, getting another family, having an experience that you'll draw on for the rest of your life that is so extreme. You know, the highs are really high. The lows are really low. You learn a lot about yourself, and you develop problem solving and critical thinking skills in a way that you just can't learn in a classroom and on your own. And, you know, there are just so many advantages to it. But I think the biggest advantage is that you're making a difference and you're important, and that's a basic human need, and it's a way to find yourself. I joined the Peace Corps because it was during the Bosnian War in 1992. I don't know if you want this too personal, but I wanted to do something.
Yes.
I wanted to be part of the bigger world. I wasn't going to join the Army, but I wanted to help. I wanted to be part of the solution. So I joined the Peace Corps, and they sent me to Morocco. And, you know, I don't know how effective I was as a Peace Corps volunteer, but honestly, I consider Core Africa to be my Peace Corps project, even though it didn't happen until 25 years later.
And tell us about Core Africa. So you thought about continuing this legacy of yours that was volunteering and making a difference. What take us to that click? I mean, that when you made the move, what really pushed you to that into that direction?
Sure. Well, that woman's question never left me. You know, I really felt like she deserved the opportunity to serve in her own country. That woman, Fatima in Marrakesh. But really, it's the next logical step for the Peace Corps to pass the baton to young Africans so that they can do what we're doing. They want to do it. You know, it's a shame that they don't have the opportunity. Nobody else is doing it. So I did it. So we modeled it after the Peace Corps, but, the way we differ from the Peace Corps is that we don't have sectors. We're not education or health or agriculture or health sanitation. I joke that we're like Seinfeld. We're an NGO about nothing, but actually we're about everything because we do whatever the people in the community ask, and really just we train them in design thinking. It's a month of pre-service training and then 10 months in their site. And they facilitate conversations. They help a local community identify their highest priority development need and come up with a project that they want. And then the volunteers connect them to either the outside resources or they build the capacity or they tap into local resources. But all the while, they're building the capacity of the community. That's really the big goal, which is, you know, helping the community. It's cliche to help them help themselves, but that's pretty much what they're doing.
Okay.
It's not about the volunteers and what they think people need. It's what the people think they need, and they usually have a very good idea of what they need. They just need an outside facilitator or, you know, like a, what do you call their
maybe their community coordinator or something?
Well, a community facilitator, but it's an instigator. There's a word that I can't think of course, because now I'm on the radio.
we'll remember.
Catalyst.
Before the end
catalyst.
Of the show.
Well, I'll call you later.
So you talked about
it's just about giving college graduates in Africa. We're in Morocco, Senegal, Malawi, and Rwanda, and we give them a chance to serve. Usually right after college, before they get on the career and family track, they take a year out, and they serve their country.
Okay, and I was going to ask you about this because you said, okay, they train for 4 weeks, right?
Uh-huh.
So
right.
Where do they train, and what does the training entails?
Well, it is usually right outside the capital city at a training center, and they all get certified in first aid and by the Red Cross. First aid and CPR, and then we have 2 weeks of intensive human-centered design and asset-based community development training. That is, that's our approach to development, which is teaching them how to facilitate, it's really a structure to the facilitation process so that they have some skills in order to guide the process. But the most important thing for them to learn is that it's a messy process, and, you know, their job is to make sure that everybody's heard and help people come to a consensus. And asset-based community development is about building on the assets that are in the community, not go in and say, what's wrong here, but to go in and say, what's right here and what can we use here to, you know, to build the capacity of this community.
Okay, so basically they get trained on CPR and, they are provided Red Cross-type training.
Yes, they all get trained in Red Cross. That's usually just a few days.
Okay.
Then they do the human-centered design and asset-based community development. That's 2 weeks. And the rest of the time is about introducing them to mostly the other NGOs in the country, you know, teaching them about the health NGOs and the education NGOs so that they can see what's available. And they understand the vast resources that they bring with them to their site.
Mm-hmm.
And then during their service, we have in-service trainings as well, where they come back out to the capital city and come together again. And they talk again to some of these NGOs or for-profit companies, anybody who can be a resource for them. And then they start helping them hone in on a project.
So,
you know, if the issue is water, potable water, they can help them, you know, decide whether a well is the best project for them or, you know, treatment is the best project, depending on, you know, the individual community. It's really about recognizing that these communities are unique and complex, and they, what they mostly need is to be heard and connected.
Mm-hmm. So how do the volunteers find you, or where do you recruit them?
Well, shows like this are very helpful. our first line resource is Peace Corps volunteers, young people who have asked them if they could be Peace Corps volunteers. Now the volunteers can say, yes, you can. Here's for Africa. So Peace Corps volunteers are great recruiters for us. But college alumni offices, or we make presentations to universities, to seniors who are thinking about what they want to do next.
Mm-hmm.
Largely word of mouth. I'd say Facebook is our best resource. Our NGO community. Mm-hmm. I mean, our first year in Rwanda, we started in Rwanda just last year, and we recruited 10 Rwandans, and we had 657 applications.
Wow.
So, I know, it was amazing and overwhelming, but, you know, for me, we have an incredible first class in Rwanda, but that means so many young people didn't get the opportunity.
Yeah, So from the volunteer to the country, how do you choose a country to start your program? What does it take?
Right. Well, we started in Morocco because that's where I served when I had connections.
Mm-hmm.
And then we expanded to Senegal and Malawi because they're you know, long history of Peace Corps. There's a thriving NGO community. They're politically stable. We wanted geographic diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And then we expanded to Rwanda last year because we had connections there. We had a lot of requests from the Rwandan government to come.
Okay.
They were just very welcoming. And, you know, it's an extraordinary place. I went there for a conference, and I was really amazed at they already have a commitment to service and unity and personal responsibility, and I knew we'd be successful there.
So now that you launched in Rwanda, when mm-hmm. is the next country that you may be targeting?
We hope to start in 2 more countries this summer. We submitted proposals to expand to 6 more countries over the next 3 years, so 2 a year each for the next 3 years. And if we get more money, we'll expand to more countries. It's money is capacity. Right now, we have a model that's working. We just had a staff conference in Senegal, and all the country directors came together. And, you know, we're starting to build that community amongst the offices. They're all unique and independent, but they work together. And I should add that once volunteers serve for a year in their own country, they can go serve in another core Africa country. So we have Moroccans serving in Senegal and Rwanda. And actually, we have a Moroccan who served in Morocco, and then he went to serve in Malawi. And he ended up marrying one of the Malawi volunteers, and now they're serving together as a married couple in the first group in Rwanda.
How about
that?
That's
really exciting.
Good stories there, huh?
They're amazing.
So, Liz, listen, we're going to take a short break, and we will continue this discussion in a moment. Thank you so much for joining us, and don't go away. So to you, our listeners, you're listening to Health Chat. Don't go away. We'll be right back. But first, the news with Bonsa Toufa.
Thank you, Lenore. Researchers say that the death rate among women undergoing a C-section is about 50 times higher in Africa than in most wealthy nations. Statistics show that 1 in 200 women die during or soon after a cesarean section in a sampling of over 3,500 births across 22 African countries. Death rates related to C-sections are roughly the same across most developed countries. However, the number of C-sections has nearly doubled over the last 20 years worldwide. The findings in The Lancet Global Health are part of the Africa Surgical Outcomes Study. It tracks all patients who receive surgery at more than 180 hospitals across 22 countries for 7 days. C-sections accounted for a third of all surgeries in the period covered. Preventable C-section deaths are mostly stemmed from a ruptured uterus, mothers who had pre-existing placental complications, bleeding before birth, during surgery, and problems related to anesthesia. Scientists say using a skin moisturizer might reduce the risk of developing diseases such as Alzheimer's and diabetes. The study had 33 participants between the ages of 58 and 95. They were asked to apply moisturizer twice a day for a month. The moisturizer contained cholesterol, free fatty acids, and ceramides, all of which are essential for skin health. In younger skin, inflammatory cytokines are released to help repair cracks in the skin barrier. The scientists observed that the cytokine levels of the participants were found to be nearly equivalent with people in their 30s at the end of 1 month. It is also found that inflammation of the skin may play a role in chronic illnesses. In a news release, the University of California, San Francisco says the researchers now plan to conduct a large-scale study to test if moisturizing creams can actually delay or prevent age-related diseases caused by inflammation. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are taking a closer look at the organization Core Africa. And joining us via phone from New York City is Liz Fanning. She is the founder and CEO of Core Africa. Again, thank you so much for joining us, Liz, and sharing with us what your organization is doing. Now, what I wanted to know is they take 1 year to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened during these 12 months? Is it a time where they don't have any other source of income, and do they get any type of stipend? How do they survive, basically?
No, it's a good question. We give them a stipend, pretty similar to what Peace Corps volunteers get.
Okay.
So it's enough for them to live comfortably in a high-poverty community. We tell them that they shouldn't have to spend any of their own money over the course of the year. We pay for the training, and we give them health insurance and pay for their travel expenses and equipment, et cetera. But they won't be able to take care of anybody either, so they can't have any dependents, children, or families that they need to take care of. They won't be able to send money home out of the stipend that we send them.
Oh, okay. Okay, because when we hear volunteerism, a lot of time you hear, it's a free endeavor, right? So, but it's good to know that there are still stipends
coming.
It's
critical that we take care of them comprehensively so that they can focus on being successful at their sites. And I think it's why Peace Corps is so successful. They really take care of the volunteers. Peace Corps volunteers tend to need a lot more. It's a lot more expensive for them. They have a lot more international travel costs and training costs and just, taking care of Americans in another country is a bigger responsibility, but we do take care of our volunteers, and they take care of each other, which is really
and they get
important.
Married from time to time.
Sometimes that has happened.
It does happen.
It happens to Peace Corps volunteers a lot, and now it's happening to our volunteers. They're just like Peace Corps volunteers. They're young adults, and they're having an experience, and they're making friendships that last a lifetime. The community that's being created, I think, will be the real long-term benefit for the volunteers, the personal and professional benefits that last a lifetime, you know, that they'll have friends, not just in their own country that they stay friends with for life, but across the continent, which is really powerful.
So talk to us about the communities they serve. Obviously, each community is different from another, and the needs are different.
Talk about
the engagement, the community's engagement in this dynamic. What do they do? How do they respond to the volunteer? Do they contribute anything?
That's great. Great question. It's so important. The communities are also a part of 4Africa. They play such an important role, first in welcoming the volunteers. They have to want the volunteer. We don't just send somebody out there without asking them and without making sure that we have somebody to take care of them, at least for the first couple of weeks, and then the volunteers find their own place to live. But they develop really tight relationships, and the communities have to participate. The volunteers' role is to really find people that they can transfer their skills to and who are going to take it over long after they leave, make sure that, you know, they follow up with that and the project is sustainable. But the community does have to pay 10% of the cost of the project in cash. It's really important. We have made exceptions for extremely high poverty communities, but it's so important that they're customers and not just charity beneficiaries. It changes, you know, what they want, what the project that they want, when they have to pay some of it. And they have ownership of it, and they're careful. They're more careful about what the project is, and it's more sustainable. So that's really important. And 25% of the cost of the project has to be from the community. So another 15% has to be in, you know, volunteer hours or land donations or in-kind support from the community. They really do have to own it.
Okay. Now, talk to us about the core values of your organization. I was looking at your website, locals, helping locals, listening and empowering. Yes. Talk to us more about these values and why they are important.
Well, it's not rocket science. But it's amazing how important it is to go in with respect and humility. And these are the ingredients to successful development. There's too much ego and there's too much money. It's not really about that. It's about going in and living with people as they do, you know, eating what they eat, sleeping where they sleep, you know, becoming part of their families and helping them from that perspective rather than as an outsider coming in to do good as the savior, you know, and this is, these are people from their country. It's great that Americans are great role models, but for our volunteers, you know, the women volunteers especially, what a role model that is for a young African girl to see an African woman coming to live in her village. It's more relatable. And actually, I think that the communities have a higher expectations of our volunteers. They really, Americans, they don't, you know, they're like aliens. They go in there and they can read books for 2 years, or they can do whatever they want, and the community will you know, take whatever they can get from it. But for our volunteers, they're really like, hey, what are you going to do for us? What are you giving us? And that's a good thing, that there's higher expectation for success, whatever that looks like. But the communities are really unique. They're so different. And we're getting to the point where we've had volunteers replacing volunteers in villages, and that's a whole other can be an asset. It's usually an asset, you know, to build on the project and have more of a long-term impact. But you know, each volunteer is unique, each community is unique. So we're really trying to understand the dynamics there and the ways to do things best, but it's always going to be a process because, you know, when you listen to people and you really follow the questions and, you know, you're open to, you know, you don't have a preconceived agenda, anything can happen.
Okay. So talk to us about how you monitor and evaluate the work on the ground.
That's so important, and it's something... I'm sorry, I'm in New York City.
New York, yes, we can recognize
really.
New York.
yeah, it's so important that we do that because really we want to be able to demonstrate that our approach of listening to communities is going to create more sustainable projects. So being able to demonstrate that and measure that is key, and it's a challenge. It's very hard to be able to conclusively and point to, you know, an impact that it makes to say that it's directly related to, you know, whatever the volunteer did. But we're doing that. We're collecting, you know, trying to understand, to measure the poverty level of the community when the volunteers arrive and when they leave at the end. So no matter what the project is, we'll be able to see if there's a difference. It's complicated because there's so many other things going on. There could be a flood or a drought or a disease or something else, or something positive that affects their wellness that has nothing to do with the volunteer. But we're still collecting that. And we have key performance indicators that we look at for the specific projects that the volunteers do. So if it's a potable water project, we'll look at health levels of the community, how many times people go to the clinic for certain waterborne diseases, that sort of thing. So we're collecting that and we're looking at it, but it's always going to be imperfect. Monitoring and evaluation is a challenge for every NGO. And I think that we actually have a unique model to try out different theories and to look at, you know, because we're in so many different countries and we have small scale, high impact projects over a relatively small, short period of time.
Yeah.
I think that we'll be able to be part of the conversation and be part of the community trying to find good, effective tools.
Okay.
But I think as an industry, we have to hold ourselves to a much higher level of demonstrating our impact. So we're trying to do that in Core Africa.
Yes, and impact is so important to be able to measure it.
You can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You just have to do it and see where it goes.
Yes. So, Liz, where do you see the work of your organization within the next 5 or 10 years? What are your hopes or upcoming projects?
Well, my dream is that we're creating a second Peace Corps, an African Peace Corps, by and for Africans. And my goal, my vision when I started this was to have 250 volunteers a year in every African country in 10 years. That's 13,500 Core Africa volunteers, you know, a mix serving in their own country and in other Core Africa countries or other African countries. So that's the dream. We're at a phase right now where we're just finishing the pilot phase and we're hopefully about to launch a scaling up across Africa. We'll see how it goes. But I'm driven by the fact that it's so doable.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we can do that. I think there's 250 Peace Corps volunteers in a lot of countries. There's no reason we can't have Core Africa volunteers. There are some countries that are maybe in political crisis that wouldn't take exchange volunteers from other countries, but they can certainly fit in the young people in those countries. That could.
Fantastic. Liz Fenning, it was so much joy and wonderful to talk to you. Do you have a final message quickly before we wrap?
Well, just our website is www.corpsafrica.org. We would love to hear from people who have ideas and comments and want to be Core Africa volunteers. We should be recruiting starting in the spring for the next group in Morocco, Senegal, Malawi, and Rwanda, and hope that we can have a few more countries before too long.
Fantastic. Liz Fenning, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Wonderful. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Liz Fenning, who is the founder and CEO of Core Africa. Thank you, our listeners, for tuning in today on Health Chat. And thanks to all our affiliates, stations for carrying Health Chat. To keep the conversation going, don't forget to join us on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And keep your questions coming in or your comments. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington, with producer Bon Satoufa. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.